This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas. Safe water ensures good health and quality of life. The Beaver Water District, a member of the American Water Works Association, and its partners monitor and protect Beaver Lake, the drinking water source of Northwest Arkansas. Drinking Water Week is May 4th through the 10th. Consider pouring a glass of water and hailing a toast to Beaver Lake. You drink it every day. More information available at bwdh20.org. The 22nd Annual Dogwood Walk will be held May 3rd from 9 a.m. until noon at Gully Park in Fayetteville. This fundraiser will feature information booths, dog contests, photo booth, face painting, a family fun walk around the park, and more. Proceeds to benefit the Humane Society of the Ozarks. 444 Pets or hsozarks.com for registration or more information. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, how lasers have gone from a phenomenon on the Jetsons to a part of daily life. We speak with a Stanford University professor who has been teaching about the light-emitting device since 1969. Also, annual hospitality awards in the River Valley honor those who serve and take care of the public. But first, officials say the death toll in Arkansas from a half-mile-wide tornado is at least 16. The hardest-hit communities were Vilonia and Mayflower. Brian Pruitt was at an evening church service in Vilonia when he learned of the tornado through a text. He told KARK Channel 4 that he went outside to take a look.
It was huge, though. It was a dark cloud. I run back in. I was like, man, it's on the way. So we all kind of hunkered down in here, and fortunately, thank God everybody's okay. There's no injuries that we know of here in this location.
Pruitt says it was a terrifying experience.
It sounded, like a freight train, your stereotypical definition of it. And what really caught my eye is the transformers popping. And that's when I started getting scared. Is you could see the flashes and hear the popping and things hitting the building, and the building was just shaking. And you're thinking, I'm ready, Lord. Here I come.
Rescue workers worked through the night checking homes for people affected by the storms. A full assessment is expected to take time. And Lieutenant Carl Minden of the Pulaski County Sheriff's Office says crews will face difficulty in some of the hardest hit locations.
Initially, just getting here, we're just trying to get through the roads. The power lines are down everywhere. Large trees. This is a heavily wooded area. It's rural. I mean, there's several houses, but it is rural. So I mean, the trees were just all over the road. So we had probably 10, 12 different crews of chainsaws trying to just get to the houses so we could check on them.
The storm damaged homes, knocked down trees, and snapped utility poles. The tornado moved over Interstate 40, where Darlene Okeke was among those who became stuck in traffic. She shared her experience with KARK Channel 4.
I asked my husband, "What is that?" And I said, "Oh, my God, it's a tornado." And then all the debris started hitting the vehicle. Signs started blowing towards us. And as we got on through, we pulled over to the side, as did a lot of other vehicles. And after that, we came on through after it was kind of lightened up. And we came on through, but the car was rocking. And we came on through, and we saw 18-wheelers turned over. One man was crushed in the 18-wheeler.
Vilonia was also heavily damaged by another tornado 3 years ago. The Arkansas Department of Emergency Management is working with local officials to assess the damage and determine the best ways to help victims. Shelters were opened last night to provide people whose homes were damaged a place to stay. Power is also out in many areas, and officials say it will take time before it can be restored. Officials say they expect the financial costs of the storm to easily reach millions of dollars. Members of the Arkansas National Guard are helping with the recovery effort today and ask people to stay away from areas damaged by the tornado. Governor Mike Beebe this morning issued state disaster declarations for Faulkner, Pulaski, and White counties. The governor also appropriated $50,000 from the governor's disaster fund to help response to the aftermath of yesterday's tornadoes and severe storms. The money will go toward the State Department of Emergency Management to help defray both program and administrative costs associated with disaster response. The Northwest Arkansas chapter of the American Red Cross is in the process of mobilizing volunteers to respond to Central Arkansas. Rick Harvey is a communications specialist for the Red Cross of Northwest Arkansas. Earlier today, he said that response plans were still being finalized, But he did say that Red Cross mobile units from across the state, including those stationed in Fort Smith and in Rogers, will be sent to the area to deliver supplies and to serve as feeding stations for those affected by yesterday's tornado.
And we will also have responders who are trained nurses and who are professional counselors and have mental health professionalism, and they will be on scene to help with medical needs and then just help the community that were affected with any, just be there for emotional support. Obviously the families involved are in a state of shock right now, and so our trained volunteers who are trained in mental health needs and that are trained nurses will go there and help in any way they can as far as that emotional support goes.
Harvey says that the Red Cross has specially trained volunteers who respond to disasters and that no volunteers off the street will be necessary. Instead, Harvey urges the general public to make monetary contributions to the Red Cross.
You can go to our website at redcross.org. You can call 1-800-RED-CROSS, or you could text the word Red Cross to 90999. And those monies that are raised will go to the disaster relief efforts. And so at this time, that's the best way to help. You know, and assisting these families and these communities is a very costly thing for the Red Cross, but that's what we're here for. We will be there to meet the needs of these families as long as it takes. And, any financial support we can receive will be very beneficial and will go directly to assist those families.
Harvey says that a response plan for Central Arkansas will be formalized later today. Ozark Regional Transit routes in Fayetteville will see some changes starting today. According to the Transit Authority, Route 41 will be split in two, with an east route running between Hillcrest Tower and the Cliffs Apartments, and a west route serving areas between the Washington County Jail, the University of Arkansas, and the Walmart on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. Route 47 will also be altered to serve the city of Johnson. To find out more, visit www.ozark.org. The Razorback baseball team won one and lost one in a Saturday doubleheader against Auburn. Arkansas won the first game in 10 innings with a final score of 4-3, while Auburn came back in the second game and defeated the Razorbacks with a final score of 7-2. The Hogs are on the road this week, playing Missouri State tomorrow and this weekend at Ole Miss. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals also had a weekend of mixed fortunes. The Naturals won 2 in Tulsa on Friday and Saturday, but when the team returned to Springdale yesterday, the Nats lost to the Drillers 5-1. The four-game set against Tulsa concludes today at Arvest Ballpark. The forecast this evening calls for a slight chance of showers with an overnight low of 44 in Northwest Arkansas. Partly cloudy with an overnight low of 49 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, Tuesday, mostly sunny with a slight chance of afternoon showers and a high of 62 in Northwest Arkansas. And the Arkansas River Valley, mostly sunny with a high of 68. Tomorrow evening, mostly cloudy with lows from 41 to 46. This is Ozarks at Large. The Human Rights Campaign, the largest LGBT civil rights organization in the nation, has announced plans to aggressively expand operations in Arkansas and two other southern states. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
The Human Rights Campaign venture is called Project One America, and it's delivering a bolus of money. This is President Chad Griffin.
Yeah, so the Human Rights Campaign is committing $8.5 million to permanent campaigns for equality in three specific states in the Deep South, Mississippi, Alabama, and my own home state of Arkansas.
An Arkadelphia native, Chad Griffin, says he's acutely aware of the lack of resources for LGBT civil rights organizing in Arkansas and across the South, but believes this initiative will help to take care of that.
We're calling this effort Project One America for a very simple reason. Today, this country is deeply, deeply divided into two Americas. When it comes to equality, you have the haves, places like California and New York, and then you have the have-nots when it comes to equality in places like the Deep South, Mississippi, Alabama, and Arkansas. And, you know, when it comes to equality, the rising tide of equality, it has to include everyone.
HRC has been cultivating a presence in all three states, including Arkansas, where Griffin consistently appears, he says. He declined giving staffing and budgetary specifics for the project, but says they are in it for the long haul.
Well, this is an unprecedented and sustained effort in these three states specifically. In Arkansas, we will have organizers that are on the ground across that state. We'll be doing community meetings. We'll be meeting with allies and LGBT people alike and really create the echo chamber for equality.
Griffin says HRC staff will deploy an army of volunteers to strategically reach out to fair-minded business, education, religious, and political leaders.
So yes, there is a component of this that's political organizing, but there's also a significant component of this that is focused on changing hearts and minds.
And timing couldn't be better, since last June's U.S. Supreme Court decision to overturn the Defense of Marriage Act is unconstitutional. 17 states in the District of Columbia now allow same-sex marriage. That leaves 33 states with laws or constitutional amendments restricting marriage to the union of one man and one woman. Of those states, 28 have 60 marriage equality cases at play, including in Arkansas, where a federal case has been filed, and a Pulaski County Circuit Court decision is pending.
Look, it is a unique moment in history. We have seen the pace of change increase at historic levels over these last several years. But what we all have to remember are the thousands of people, the leaders and the everyday LGBT folks that all came before us, because every single one of us, all of our organizations, all of the leaders today, we all stand on the shoulders of giants, everyday folks who've been working hard in these states across this country for decades. They are the reason that we are where we are today.
Being raised in the South, Chad Griffin says he has a certain affinity with the LGBT experience there.
You know, being a Southerner myself, having grown up my entire childhood in Arkansas, I fight the notion that the South is these finish line states, that they should wait their turn. You know, I know, and folks on the ground in these states know, the South is ready. The South is ready for this fight. The South is ready for equality.
The Human Rights Campaign, with 1.5 million members, is the largest in the nation, including the South, with one-third of members originating from Texas to Florida, North Carolina to Georgia. Last count, HRC took in nearly $29 million in member contributions and grants. Corporate supporters include Apple, Microsoft, American Airlines, and Nationwide Insurance, to name a few, with additional funding from wealthy celebrities such as Brad Pitt, Jennifer Lopez, and Lady Gaga. As for the new $8.5 million Southern campaign, it's starting immediately, Chad Griffin says, who will lead a three-state press tour to kick off Project One America, beginning in Arkansas, May 5th. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Chad Griffin will begin his three-state tour in Little Rock Monday, May 5th, with a news conference at the state capitol at 11 a.m., followed by a community gathering at the Arkansas Arts Center. Check out hrc.org for more information. Coming up in just a few minutes here on Ozarks at Large, honoring those whose service, if done well, often goes unnoticed.
You can create that kind of chemistry for everybody and spoil them rotten, because in hospitality, it's our job to keep people warm and safe and dry and happy. And when you can do it for your colleagues, it's a pretty special occasion, because they're always caring for others. It's fun to care for them.
Fort Smith's annual Grit Awards, just ahead here on Ozarks.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. The state of Indiana has come up with a new way to combat identity theft and tax fraud, a pop quiz.
There's four questions, and they are questions that only the real taxpayer could answer.
And so far, thousands of people have been denied refunds because of it. That story next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Listen to Here and Now this afternoon from 1 to 3 on 91.3 FM.
Though the 2014 elections are yet 6 months away, politics was front and center in the news of the last week. Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas has more in this week's Talk Business and Politics Update.
U.S. Senator John Bozeman had unexpected heart surgery at Mercy Hospital in Rogers on Tuesday. Bozeman, 63, was taken to the hospital after suffering pain in his chest and shoulder. After running several tests, doctors diagnosed Bozeman with an acute aortic dissection, and he was admitted for immediate surgery. Bozeman is recovering positively, according to a statement from his office. The Arkansas Supreme Court's denial of a petition for rehearing in a case brought by Attorney General Dustin McDaniel could threaten all pending and future litigation in the state, McDaniel said on Thursday. Earlier this month, the state's high court tossed a $1.2 billion judgment against Johnson & Johnson in a Medicaid fraud case involving the drug Risperdal. With the court's ruling, McDaniel suggested that lawyers must now research original acts and legislative intent versus reading what is in the published legal code. Quote, "They now create in every case in Arkansas the potential risk of malpractice for lawyers because they say you can no longer trust what's printed in the law books," McDaniel said. A new report from Walmart reveals that the retailer spent $439 million in legal fees and other costs in the past 2 years associated with investigations of alleged violations of the U.S. Foreign Corruption Practices Act. Last year, Walmart spent $282 million on legal dealings, on top of the $157 million in costs in 2012. That was the year the probe in Mexico began and was expanded to India, China, and Brazil. PAM Transportation posted a healthy $1.36 million first quarter profit on smaller revenues of $97 million. 1 year ago, the Taneytown-based trucking firm showed a $456,000 net loss on revenue of more than $99 million. Deltic Timber saw its first quarter earnings slide from a year ago as rough winter weather slowed business conditions. On the flip side, Deltic saw revenues grow, made a strategic land investment, and noted improving real estate conditions in its different segments. For the quarter ended March 31st, Deltic Timber posted net income of $4.9 million. Dr. Robin Bowen was on Tuesday unanimously elected the new president of Arkansas Tech University, making her not only the first female to lead Arkansas Tech, but also the first female to lead a public four-year university in Arkansas. Bowen, a Missouri native, is now serving as vice president at Fitchburg State University in Massachusetts. And finally, Pulaski County Circuit Judge Tim Fox struck down the state's voter ID law, Act 595 of 2013, late Thursday, declaring the controversial measure unconstitutional because it adds an additional requirement for voters to meet to cast their ballots. Fox's ruling also declared the regulations set forth by the State Board of Election Commissioners related to the law void and unenforceable. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business and Politics Update.
Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by AT&T, challenging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. This is Ozarks at Large. Fort Smith is known for its grit, and last week, the Fort Smith Convention and Visitors Bureau announced its annual Grit Awards. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
Late last week, about 125 people attended the Giving Recognition in Tourism, or Grit Awards, at the movie lounge in Fort Smith. Sherry Scorby, Convention Events Sales Director for the Fort Smith Convention and Visitors Bureau, says the award ceremony, which was created in 2012, has continued to grow.
I think it's a nice combination of somewhat elegant, but also really cozy in that the familiarity is there and there's a lot of old friends and a lot of new friends made. It's a short event. It's only a couple of hours, but there's a lot of acknowledgement, a lot of laughter, and last night, a lot of tears.
But happy tears.
Good tears, yeah. I mean, you know, it's just like, it was great. So I love working on it because you can create that kind of chemistry for everybody and spoil them rotten because in hospitality, it's our job to keep people warm and safe and dry and happy. And when you can do it for your colleagues, it's a pretty special occasion because they're always caring for others. It's to care for them.
Business Partner of the Year and the Polly Cruz Hospitality Person of the Year were among the awards announced last week. The Fort Smith Convention and Visitors Bureau also showcased the past year's hometown hospitality heroes: Sharon Chapman, Melissa Schoenfeld, Bill Hollenbeck, Brooke Schock, Courtney Shreve, and Mike Alsup. Convention Event Sales Director Sherry Scorby says it's important to organize the GRID Awards because the Visitors Bureau is eternally grateful for these people helping them better serve the community.
Many of these folks are volunteers. They don't receive any pay. They work long, incredible hours promoting Fort Smith as a community. They help us to bring conventions to Fort Smith because they have connections in their various associations. And so they provide us leads to pursue to bring conventions here. And then they facilitate the work when it gets here, and they share the involvement of the event. And each and every event has many details, and it's just wonderful. Often they bring volunteers as well, you know, in addition to themselves. And then ultimately, the bottom line on all of this is that there's a huge economic impact to the community because of the number of individuals coming to Fort Smith.
When thinking of popular vacation spots, most people probably think of larger areas like New York City. But Scorby says more and more people are traveling to smaller towns for vacation. This might be surprising to local residents who may have come to see their hometown as home rather than a vacation destination.
We're finding that as a smaller city, so many people are getting away from the big city venues. They really don't want to go to New York. They really don't want to go to Los Angeles. They want to go someplace where it feels like home and explore at a pace that's more relaxing and still get some work done. And Arkansas provides a wonderful venue for that. It provides wonderful scenery. Fort Smith is very affordable. They're amazed that they can have a fantastic time and such an affordable one with a lot less stress. So the hometown people don't see that because that's all they know. But the travelers see that because it's completely different from what they know. And then they bring more people back because it was a great experience.
In 2013, True West magazine named Fort Smith the top true western town in the country. Scorby says more than 200 towns compete for this title. The work the Visitors Bureau did around winning the honor earned the organization another award this year.
Through the Arkansas Department of Parks and Tourism, we received a Henry Award in acknowledgement of our successful community development of promoting Fort Smith as the top true western town in the U.S. And we had international contacts that were made off of that. So our current marketing program is spun from that. But I mean, there are five of us here at the CVB. We like to say we're small but mighty, but we're continually working on promoting Fort Smith through websites, social media, radio, television, all the traditional means that you can. And then depending on, for the longest time, we used True Grit, which is where the Grit Awards came from, because when the movie came out, it's about Fort Smith. I mean, you're constantly looking for different ways to appeal to different people in broader demographics based on what your assets are. So yeah, that's what they pay us to do, and we love it.
More information is available at fortsmith.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
When you connect the dots too early, you can easily miss the real story, the whole story. Connections and nuance go missing. At Morning Edition, we focus on collecting the dots before we try to connect them. Only then do we consider what it all means together. Listen each weekday. It's Morning Edition from NPR News.
Tune in each weekday morning between 5 and 9 to hear Morning Edition on KUAF.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansas Songs.
Open that door, Richard. Hey, Richard, open the door.
The catchphrase, open the door, Richard, maybe little remembered today, but it caught hold in American vernacular in the mid-1940s and spread like wildfire. And rhythm and blues pioneer Louis Jordan of Brinkley and Monroe County, heard here, can take some of the credit or blame for the phrase. It all stems from a comedy stage routine done by comic James Mason and perfected by Clinton Dusty Fletcher, but possibly dating back even further. Fletcher plays a drunkard coming home after a night of partying, only to discover he's lost his house key. The inebriated quips are occasionally punctuated with knocking and Fletcher yelling for his roommate, Richard, to open the door. The first musical version of this comedy bit was done by sax player Jack McVeigh, formerly of Lionel Hampton's band.
Why, he don't know who he's throwing out of his joint. I go back in his joint and bust it down to the ground. Open the door, Richard! Hey, Richard, open the door!
Louis Jordan tried to open the door, Richard, in spring 1947, already months into the trend. In fact, New York radio station WOR banned any version of the song that year and even asked comedians to cease doing Richard material. Jordan's song version of Open the Door, Richard, incorporates much of the actual comedy routine into the song. Some of Dusty Fletcher's choice lines, as spoken by Louie, include, I'm going to drink to everyone's health until I ruin my own. The market became crowded with versions of the song, including by Count Basie, Hot Lips Page, and Jimmy Durante. Jack McVeigh quickly changed the name of his band to The Door Openers and recorded a flop Open the Door, Richard follow-up called The Keys in the Mailbox. The song's sketchy origins and quick ubiquity meant a lawsuit was in order. Dusty Fletcher and John Mason were given lyrical credit. Dusty Fletcher and Don Howell were given musical credit, although no one seems to know who Don Howell is. Some of the song versions didn't use any of the Open the Door, Richard comedy routines, but only the refrain of Open the Door, Richard. A version by Walter Brown with a Tiny Graham sextet underscores the popularity of Open the Door, Richard. Richard answers out the window to the scene below. Everyone starts hollering at me to open the door. Phil Harris, Bing Crosby, Jack Benny. If I won't open the door for them, damn if I'll open it up for you, he says, asking, why can't you give a man a little peace? The answer is, that's what you've been getting. Open the door and give us a little peace. In this risque version, at the end, they discover the door's been unlocked all along.
But I hate to be caught out on the street like this, cause it makes you look so common. And I know I ain't common, cause I got class I ain't never used yet. But I guess I better get on in the house, cause I don't want my pastor to catch me out like this. Hey, Richard, open the door!
Comedian Dusty Fletcher got into the Music Recording Act, too, issuing his own version of Open the Door, Richard, on National Records with Jimmy Jones and his band. The record label calls Fletcher the originator. Side two of the record incorporates the longer part of the stage routine, where Fletcher tries to gain entry with a ladder and gets beat up by a policeman. In 1945, Dusty Fletcher starred in a short film version of the Richard routine that helped solidify the popularity of the phrase. It was directed by William Forrest Crouch, who directed many of Louis Jordan's film vehicles. Using some broad black American stereotypes, Fletcher runs through the entire routine wearing Burt Williams-styled oversized shoes, white gloves, and a top hat, from getting kicked out of the bar, going home, to the very physical bits with the ladder and the cop. A film sequel, Answer to Open the Door, Richard, was also made, starring Steppin' Fetchit. Why wouldn't Richard open the door there? Nothing salacious, but just another stereotype. Fetchit was too lazy. White hot through the mid-1940s, Open the Door, Richard has lived on. People of a certain age named Richard can attest to the number of times they've been asked to open the door. The phrase is referenced in separate Looney Tunes cartoons featuring Foghorn Leghorn and Yosemite Sam, among countless other media references. Beyond its many versions in English, the song has been recorded in several different languages. Rockabilly performer Billy Lee Riley of Pocahontas in Randolph County recorded it for Sun Records in Memphis, Tennessee in late 1957. Louis Jordan's version is one of several Jordan songs featured on the soundtrack to the Mafia II video game, released in August 2010. In 1967, Bob Dylan and the band recorded a song called Open the Door, Homer. However, the song's refrain is actually Open the Door, Richard, I've heard it said before. Fairport Convention, Thunderclap Newman, and other bands of that era recorded Homer. The song appeared on Bob Dylan and the band's basement tape albums, although Arkansas-er Levon Helm didn't play on most of the basement tape sessions. The phrase Open the Door, Richard became one of several calls of the American Civil Rights Movement and racial integration battles of the 1950s and 60s as doors previously closed were demanded to be opened. With that, and the phrase's origins in minstrelsy, one could say Open the Door, Richard has come full circle. Here in its entirety is rhythm and blues pioneer Louis Jordan of Brinkley in Monroe County with the song Open the Door, Richard, only one part of the extensive Open the Door, Richard catchphrase phenomena.
I met old Zeke standing on the corner the other day. That cat sure was booted with liquid.
He was what?
He was obnoxicated.
He was what?
He was inebriated.
He was what?
Well, he was just plain drunk.
Well, all right then.
He sure was salty with the bartender. Bartender's trying to make him buy another drink. Zeke told the bartender, ain't no need of me buying no drinks when everybody else is buying them. I'm gonna drink to everybody's health till I ruin my own.
Open the door, Richard!
Why, he don't know who he's throwing out of that joint. Why, I'll go back in that joint and take a short stick and bust it down to the ground.
Open the door, Richard!
But I hate to be caught out on the street like this, cause it makes you look so common. And I know I ain't common, cause I got class I ain't never used yet. But I guess I better get on in the house, cause I don't want my pastor to catch me out like this.
Hey, Richard, open the door!
Now look at that old woman across the street, done stuck her head out of the window, calling her sister. Look at her hunching her sister, saying, ain't that him? Ain't that him? Yes, it's me, and I'm drunk again.
Open the door, Richard.
I know he's in there, because I got on the clothes. They can't throw him out, because I owe just as much back rent here as he does. Imagine that old woman charging us $3 a month and getting mad because we 12 months in the arrears. Come meet me last Thursday saying, ain't you boys gonna give me some back rent? I told her she'd be lucky if she got some front rent.
Open the door, Richard!
Hey, Richard, open the door! Cause I'm standing here scratching in my pants pocket and standing here groping in my coat pocket and standing here feeling in my shirt pocket and I can't find the key. Hey, open the door, Richard!
Louis Jordan of Brinkley, Monroe County with Open the Door, Richard, part of the Open the Door, Richard catchphrase phenomenon of the mid-1940s and well beyond. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Richard, why don't you open that door?
Open the door, Richard!
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. For more information, visit arkansongs.org. This is Ozarks at Large. In 1917, Albert Einstein presented the theoretical foundations for the laser. It would be decades later until a laser was demonstrated. Now a reality for more than 50 years, the laser has become an integral part of the technological landscape. Earlier this month, Dr. Robert Beyer, the William R. Kennan Jr. Professor of the School of Humanities and Sciences in the Department of Applied Physics at Stanford University, discussed the laser's history, contemporary uses, and possible future applications on the University of Arkansas campus. He was the 2014 Robert D. Maurer Distinguished Lecturer, a guest of the U of A's Department of Physics. While here, he talked to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums about the laser.
So I call the laser the stealth utility. It's used in more ways than you can imagine, and it's surprisingly that it has solved problems that we didn't even know exist when the laser was invented. So the focus of my talk tonight is not on the laser itself, but on discovering these problems that were solved by the laser in some unique way. And I'll call, you know, so I'm going to tease the audience a little bit. Think about it. Do you know something the laser does in your life that's so surprising you would have never thought about it in advance?
Well, I know that most of what a laser does in our everyday life, we never see, right?
Well, it, for example, you carry a cell phone. That cell phone is manufactured with a laser. The glass corners are cut with a laser. The microelectronics in that cell phone are all made with a laser. And without the laser, you would not be able to carry a cell phone in your pocket.
GPS, doesn't that count?
GPS counts as a technology. It's not directly laser related, but the clocks that are used in GPS are atomic clocks. And just a few weeks ago, the most precise clock ever made by man was made by Junier and his group at the University of Colorado. It loses only 1 second in 10 to the 18 seconds What is 10 to the 18 seconds? That's the life of the universe, 13.7 billion years. So this clock is so good that in the entire time the universe has existed, it's only lost 1 second.
And we'll allow that. Right. From the days of the infancy of the laser, has it always been considered something that would change our lives?
No. In fact, quite early on, Art Shallow coined the phrase, the laser is a solution looking for a problem. So for the first 10 years, we had no idea what to do with this new form of light. We knew it was direct. We knew we could focus it. It was gaining power and extending its color range. But we had no clue about how best to use the laser and what it could do for us.
Well, you mentioned the color range. I read a presentation you put together about your life with the laser, and there would be these little things like people would get excited about orange or blue or a new color. What would those new colors signify?
Well, early on, the lasers were single wavelength or single color. And in fact, every new laser that was invented for the first 10 years was reported in the literature. A certain laser was invented. It has a wavelength of this amount. And then the next week, you'd read in the article, oh, another new laser's been invented. What we needed was the ability to tune the wavelength continuously across the range of colors. And by luck, the project I worked on for my thesis was a tunable laser source. And we were lucky to get it to work. It barely worked, but it did. And it was tunable. So I built the first tunable visible laser in our laboratory in 1968, 69. It was a big deal then. And now today, it's not such a big deal. We do it all the time. But like radio frequencies, we have as much control over laser light today as we have over radio frequencies that make radio broadcasting possible.
When you were working on that thesis in 1968, 1969, did you have a grand idea of what laser might be able to do?
No grand idea, but I had ideas of what we could do. And we used the tunability to begin a program on remote atmospheric sensing, transmit the laser beam into the atmosphere, tune the color to the molecular resonance. And over the years, we were able to detect carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, we could detect methane, we could detect water vapor, we could measure temperature. And our goal in the long term was to show that this remote sensing tool called the laser could be useful for first ground-based remote sensing and then space-based remote sensing. So 2 days ago, I got a call from NASA, from Upendra Singh. And Upendra said, you know, Bayer, he says, I want to invite you to our next conference on laser remote sensing that's be held in Asia this summer. And we're doing the following things. And indeed, all the things that we were trying to do and we were learning how to do in the 1980s are now flying in space. The lasers are in space. They're doing the measurements from space on a global scale. And it's timely. We need to be able to do these measurements.
Is this something that's sort of exponential, that the more you know about it, the more you can do, and it speeds up development and understanding?
It is exponential, both in the capability of the laser, the number of lasers being applied, and the range of applications. And so the surprise is the range of solutions that have been found for the laser that weren't even questions when it was invented.
And there are practical, I mean, for the layperson, there are these practical, not just cell phones, but using it to, what, strip paint and things like that?
Strip paint is one. I call that subtractive manufacturing, but that was a surprise to me. We had known that the lasers that we were building were so powerful they would strip the black paint off our power meter. That was obvious. I mean, the power meter had to be repainted after you use the laser. But it never dawned on me there would actually be a use for the laser in stripping paint. And there is. And it turns out stripping paint from an aircraft is a big business. It's about $500 million a year business just to repaint airplanes every year. And you're not allowed to use chemicals to strip the paint. So it's now expensive to strip the paint. But a laser does it without chemicals. It remains dry. You can continue working on the aircraft as you strip the paint and repaint it. When we explained this to the vice president of Boeing a number of years ago, his first question was, well, if you can take the paint off, can you put it back on?
That's a good question.
Yeah, it is. And the answer is yes. The laser pulse length from being a short pulse, a billionth of a second, to being a longer pulse, a millionth of a second. And then you make the paint in a plastic form, you just remelt it back on the aircraft. So you can repaint the airplane as well.
Okay, so when you're working or researching on laser properties and technologies, what does the workspace look like? I mean, I have this image of a science fiction white lab coat, big goggles.
I'm sorry. Only in Hollywood do scientists all wear white lab coats okay. and be in the basement and look like geeks. And the good news is we have a program on TV that sort of celebrates geekiness now. So the Big Bang Theory has, I think, changed people's attitude. Maybe I can be a geek and do what I want to do and it's okay. But our labs really are not that complicated, and it's optical benches and a lot of optical components. And we used to build big lasers and require a lot of power. Now the lasers have gotten much smaller, so now we can have two or three experiments on a simple optical table. The remarkable thing is everywhere you go in the world, whether it's from China or Germany or the U.S., when you're inside a laser lab, they all look the same.
Really?
They really do.
I imagine they're clean.
They're clean. We try to keep them clean because dust particles on the laser give us difficulties. I've had more difficulty in the past when my students would bring lunch into the lab and leave a little crumbs around. Then the ants would come, and I've had an ant kill a laser before. So.
Really?
It crawled right on the end of the laser rod, and when we fired the laser, the ant got burnt, but it also damaged the optics.
Well, okay, this brings up, you mentioned Hollywood, and Hollywood's first depictions of lasers, anyone who's seen a 50s or 60s science fiction movie or an early James Bond film knows that lasers in films were used as weapons and,
yes.
and cutting things. And are lasers used in defense?
They are now, and it took 50 years. But early on, one of the movies about lasers cutting things was called Real Genius. It was filmed at Caltech in the 1970s. And they actually went into the laser labs and took photographs of the then existing lasers. And it's a remarkable sort of thing to look back in time in a movie. The closing scene of the movie is famous, and it was actually picked up by Mythbusters. The closing scene is the big megawatt laser illuminates a can of Jiffy Pop, popcorn. Popcorn was in an aluminum metal dish, and you put it over the fire and shook it, right? So the laser caused the popcorn to pop, and everybody was then showered with popcorn. So a few years ago, Mythbusters showed up in our lab and said, you know, we want to test this. This has to be untrue. There's no way that a laser can pop popcorn. And we said, no, we're pretty sure lasers can pop popcorn today. And then they made it really difficult. Well, in the movie, the popcorn was in an aluminum can. We have to wrap the kernel into aluminum. I said, yeah, you're really making our life more difficult. But we popped the kernel of corn. And that episode is on Mythbusters if you want to go check it out.
You can pop popcorn with a laser.
You can.
I imagine then it is difficult to know what the laser will be doing 40 years from now.
Not so difficult. I'll talk about that in surprising applications of lasers. So what I usually tell my students is lasers are now powerful enough to cut metal at a distance. That's meant to be a euphemism for if there's an aircraft at 20 kilometers, the laser can now cut it out of the sky. And you can see this in real time. Just go on YouTube. All the youngsters in the audience can do this. And type defense high power laser. That's all you have to type, defense high power laser. And you get a little movie clip of a laser shooting down a little helicopter, shooting down a drone aircraft, shooting down an artillery shell, for gosh sakes, and then shooting down a rocket coming into the scene. So lasers are now of enough power to be able to cut metal at a distance.
This is, you're not telling me this to make me sleep better, I take it.
No, in fact, there's real applications for this because lasers are a defensive weapon and they're very precise in what they do. They don't create havoc everywhere. They only destroy what you point them at. But the surprise to me, the surprising application was that lasers are now being used to cut metal at a distance commercially. There's a market, and the market is to disassemble nuclear power plants. And the first example is Fukushima. So after the tremendous earthquake and tidal wave in 2011 that destroyed that nuclear power plant, you need to be able to remove the material. It's radioactive. You can send welders in and gown them up and hope that they can cut through the steel and the concrete, but it exposes people unnecessarily to the residual radiation. The solution is the laser. It turns out a 100-kilowatt commercial laser now being manufactured can cut the Fukushima power plant into small cubes that could be picked up by helicopter and flown to a disposal site without humans being anywhere close. You're a kilometer standoff distance. That's a surprising application of a high-power laser. And it's not going to be the first time it will be used this way. There are many nuclear power plants ending their life now, their lifespan, and they're going to have to be dismantled. And if you have a way to dismantle them that allows you to be at a standoff distance yet be effective, it will be a real useful tool.
I imagine there are still other applications that we can't even imagine yet.
There are. So my favorite one is has been researched for now 50 years. It's called laser fusion. And everybody says, you know, fusion is that idea that's always 50 years in the future. But in January, the National Ignition Facility laser, the world's largest laser, made a major step forward in trying to create a miniature star in our laboratory. And they walked up, we call the threshold curve, a good step, and the paper was published and got some press. So we're one big step toward reaching the point where the laser can squeeze hydrogen gas tight enough that it will begin to generate energy from atomic fusion. And that's the same source of energy that our sun and virtually every star you see in the sky uses. So nature got there first. Nature uses gravity to bring the star together till it's hot enough that it begins to fuse hydrogen and deuterium to make helium. We're using the laser as artificial gravity to compress the small millimeter pellet to create a small source of fusion material. Now, if we do this 15 times a second, we have a power plant. The power plant is laser-driven, and my dream 50 years from now, laser-driven fusion engines will literally be the power source for the world. We'll just call it laser energy. Everybody will acknowledge that it's just like the center of the sun. We're burning hydrogen to generate helium. It's a clean source of energy, and that is an application for the laser, is to do that and make it a reality.
Wow. One last question. Do you remember as a young man or a boy what first sparked an interest in science?
I remember well because I grew up in a place called Pasadena, California, which was the home of the big telescopes in California at that time. And my grandfather was the machinist at the Pasadena machine shop that provided the support and the tooling for the Mount Wilson Observatory and then later for the Palomar Observatory. So the first thing that I saw as a young boy was the Mount Wilson Observatory and the ability to walk in on the floor and stand beneath this large telescope. And since that time, I've been an amateur astronomer. I tell my friends in my amateur astronomy club, I get paid to do physics. I don't get paid to do astronomy. So I do astronomy because I have a passion for it. It's just a delightful thing to do. And so two nights ago, I was up most of the night watching the total eclipse.
Yeah. Did you have a clear sky for it?
Not very clear in the Bay Area. It looked like it might have been much more clear here.
It was beautiful here, yeah.
Yeah, but I did get images from the beginning to the end, a shot taken every 2.5 minutes. I haven't had time to develop the movie yet, but it'll be a nice movie.
Anything else we should know?
I have a passion for science as well. And I think those of us who work in our lives in science really look at science as a tool that we can use to improve the global situation, improve our health, really make the world a better place for people to live. And we're on the very early times in our scientific age as a society, just a blink of an eye in the time of human existence. But there's been enormous changes in the world in that very short time, and I hope it continues in the future.
Robert L. Beyer is William R. Kinnon, Jr. Professor of the School of Humanities and Sciences in the Department of Applied Physics at Stanford, where he has been conducting research and teaching classes in lasers and nonlinear optics since 1969. He was the 2014 Maurer Distinguished Lecturer at the University of Arkansas this month. The Maurer Lecture Series is sponsored by the Department of Physics and the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences. He spoke with Ozarks at Largest Kyle Kellums while in Northwest Arkansas.
Jazz is in the air every Friday and Saturday evening from 10 p.m. till 1 a.m. right here on KUAF 91.3 FM. From 10 to midnight, it's Shades of Jazz with yours truly, Robert Ginsberg. Daniel Estes takes you from midnight till 1 a.m. on Saturday morning with Goodnight Jazz, and it's Fred Hall's Swing Thing at midnight on Sundays. America's Music, Jazz, on your NPR station, KUAF.
Good day. It is Monday, April 28th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large, and with me now is Becca Martin Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Musical Monday.
Okay.
And this is Kevin Kinder's hand up the back of my shirt telling me what to say.
Playing ventriloquist.
Exactly. There is a band called Grizz. Actually, it's not a band. It's an electronic producer. And it's not just G-R-I-Z. It's capital G, capital R, small I, capital Z. His real name is Grant Kwasinski or something like that. And he has been all over at music festivals. He will be live at George's Majestic Lounge on Tuesday at 9 o'clock with guests Michael Menard and Late Night Radio. And admission is $18. And there's a band called The Head and the Heart.
I've heard of them. I know that.
Like them?
I do, yes. Okay. Yeah, very much.
Well, they're apparently between gigs at Coachella, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, Bonnaroo and Lollapalooza, and they're going to just wander through to play at the Washington County Fairgrounds.
Sounds good.
They will be there at 7 o'clock Thursday. It's a concert presented by the University of Arkansas Headliner Concerts Committee. The kids got their tickets last week, and general admission tickets are $25 at the Walton Arts Center box office.
Not a bad deal. Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is Features Editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. KUAF is supported by Aurora Digital Signage, where images and videos can be instantly uploaded and displayed on multiple screens and locations, leading to improved communication in hotels, museums, restaurants, retail environments, and school systems. AuroraDigitalSignage.com for more information. Theater Squared's Season 8 concludes with Hamlet, on stage now through May 4th at Walton Arts Center's Nadine Baum Studios. Shakespeare's epic tragedy is equal parts ghost story, political intrigue, doomed romance, and murder mystery. Tickets and information for Hamlet available at theater2.org or by calling 443-5600. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Crosses. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas. My colleagues Antoinette Grajeda and Kyle Cullums will be back tomorrow, Tuesday, for an all-new daily edition of Ozarks at Large. Tomorrow, we'll hear from our Ozarks at Large insect expert, Dr. Donald Steinkraus, who will talk about gardening and bugs, keeping bugs at bay, or maybe plants that help insects and people. So that's on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large. Today, we'll end with a song from Grizz. Becca Martin-Brown mentioned just a few minutes ago that Grizz will be at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville tomorrow evening. The 23-year-old producer is from Detroit, Michigan, and this is his song, Feel the Love. We'll be right back.